97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Annie Fry. Brad, I'm telling you, this is the first time I filled in and you have a new intro. What's the story behind it? Why did you guys change the intro?
So that intro right there is the Manny Fry Show intro, and that's for whenever me and a Ryan hosts. So sometimes Ryan and Ryan Wiggins and I fill in, and sometimes it's you and I. And so I was like, man, this works for everybody, so let's just throw it in there. And it's just let the people know that Annie's on vacation. She's having a great time. I hope so. I think they're in the air right now flying, so...
Got it. Well, I got to say, I'm pretty dense. I didn't realize, like, okay, that Ryan would have worked for Ryan Wiggins, too. And here I am the first hour. I said, oh, that's so nice. You had the new intro voiced for me. Yeah. Nope. For Ryan Wiggins.
We talked about this a little bit yesterday, but the best produced segments on this show are the ones that Ryan Wiggins does. he's got sounders and all sorts of stuff for the stuff he does.
Oh, yeah, that's actually great. Well, he has an invested interest in keeping his position relevant, yes. And he's so good at what he does, too. All right, we have the YouTube poll that is going up. It's the Epstein stuff. There's been a couple of people that come out, people that are pretty straight shooters, people that you would believe to say there's no funny business when it comes to this Epstein. It looks like everything is straightforward. It's exactly how they reported it. Why do I have such a hard time accepting that answer? So you can go to the YouTube poll now. And what's the exact question? It's
The exact question is, are you buying the official narrative on Jeffrey Epstein? It's a yes or no question. But we definitely know that you guys out there listening have thoughts and opinions. So what we want you to do is to comment and leave those in the chat whenever you come and vote so that we can read them and maybe read them on the air and kind of share some of that.
I'm not buying it.
I know why you aren't. I know why you aren't. And it makes a lot of sense to not. It's good to be skeptical. But I think the other side of that is, too, there has just been so little information that has come out. You know, from the very beginning, there's so much suspicious circumstances surrounding it. And then there are so many big name, powerful people that are involved or at least mentioned in it. And it's just it makes you go, something's up.
All right. So before we went to the break, I mentioned on CNN, I listened to this clip and it is just completely Bush League. Maybe that's the right way to put it. This doesn't seem like network television should be acting this way. It was just, to me, community TV where you just got a bunch of people yelling at each other. And I listened to it and I thought to myself, how in the world does anyone watch this network if this is how they interact with each other? So I wanted to play for you a part of it. Now, keep in mind, this isn't even the full clip. This is just a portion of it. And I want you to know that the moment that we're going to start playing leading up to it, it was like 5 minutes of this before that moment. Kevin O'Leary was part of this panel on CNN, and they were discussing the reported settlement that Paramount offered Donald Trump when it comes to the CBS interview. So there's a lawsuit from Donald Trump. Apparently, they offered $15 million to try to get this 60 Minutes piece to lawsuit to go away. Apparently, the Trump administration is coming back at that, and they're saying, no, we want $25 million in an apology. That's where it's at. And that's where the CNN panel was talking about it, saying that apparently, because there's a potential merger in the works, that Donald Trump could be holding this up, and he's using that as leverage to get more money from them. And that's the panel just went absolutely bananas. So let's go ahead and play some of this. And I you know what? Before we play it, I apologize to you because it's so frustrating to listen to. All right, tell me if you get anything out of this. Let's play it.
This is gross and unseemly. We're supposed to have a free press in this country, and there is something dreadfully wrong when the president of the United States is filing nuisance lawsuits and trying to take tens of millions of dollars from private companies.
Wait a second.
Absolutely
this was
absurd
a word
everyone
salad edit. You remember the word salad edit?
Wait.
If this claim had no merit, we wouldn't be talking about whether it
has no merit.
I have a question. How do you guys constantly defend the biggest whining titty baby on the planet?
Excuse
trust me.
Did all the executives of CBS lose their jobs on 60 Minutes? Yes or no? Yes. Was it a word salad edit? Yes.
No.
Did they breach their covenant as reporters? Yes.
Who lost their job?
What covenant are you talking about?
You know, we've talked.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. What are you talking about?
All right. I think we got a pretty good taste for that. So, one, if you listen to that and you are like, I need a break, I'm with you, because that was exhausting to try to decipher the people talking over each other. Oh, was that just so messy? That was CNN. This is the best they have to offer.
I'm glad you went with this direction in this audio clip, because as I was pulling it, I'm like, this is awful. Like, Brian asked for it, so I'll give it to him. But if I were pulling audio for it, I would not. This clip wouldn't make the cut, because I was sitting here thinking we're trying to get to Kevin O'Leary's point, which you can't really hear because it's just everybody. And it's interesting to me whenever you listen to that clip. And I hope I don't step on your point here, but it's interesting to me whenever you listen to that clip. There are a few times when somebody gets to speak and you can hear what they're saying, and they do a good job of controlling the crowd. And that's whenever somebody attacking Donald Trump is doing it. They come out, they speak, they're like, but is this? And then everybody goes quiet. And then the conservative, or at least the less left-leaning member of the panel starts talking, and everybody dogpiles him right away, and he can't get his point out, and which it's frustrating to listen to.
Here's can I give my idea of what's happening here on CNN? Because I kind of can guess. So over the last couple of months, you've had a panelist on CNN named Scott Jennings.
Yeah.
You're familiar with his work?
Oh, yes.
They let Scott Jennings answer questions. And I'm guessing because he's making points and making them look foolish, that they said the new strategy is when there's someone on the show that is a conservative that may be making a point, the defense is to talk over them. And that is how they're basically the Scott Jennings defense is how I'm going to call it. Now, Scott has been doing fantastic work. And I got to tell you, whenever I see the clips of him on the panels on CNN, I always thought, wow, they're letting him answer. That's good news. I think that's a thing of the past. Let me point out something else, too, because when you hear people talking over each other when they're trying to make a point or they're trying to answer a question that you ask them, and all they do is interrupt, doesn't that make you not want to talk to the person? Doesn't that make you just want to ignore them and just avoid them, because nothing that'll ever come from that will be productive? And it's just not, they lose all interest intellectually. It does for me, like when that happens. What, remember, I look at like Bill Maher, for example.
Yeah.
He's always been liberal and he's had these panel discussions and he's always let people have their say. And, you know, give it to Bill Maher to let people have their opinions. And even though his opinion wasn't always the most researched, he always had an opinion and he might have had a joke and made people laugh. So it might have been a little bit more impactful. And plus it was his show, so he can control where the conversation was going.
Right.
But he always let people answer. And I found that in today's world, if you can just have discussions with people and in the end you really don't feel like you have to win the conversation, you can just have a conversation, that's so much more appealing, because then you're not fighting each other at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's a great point where you said you're not trying to win the conversation. You end up talking past one another and you're not trying to learn anything new or convey anything new to the other party. You just are trying to get the gotchas whenever you're trying to win the conversation, and you miss out on so much possibility to come to a consensus or at least come to an agreement on certain areas of things and agree where you can agree. I mean, there will always be things out there that you don't agree on, but you got to look for those areas and at the very least understand where the other side is coming from.
And doesn't it show you too that when it comes to conservative versus liberal media, and there's a lot of liberal podcasts and popular liberal podcasts too, and then you can look at conservative talk radio and conservative podcasts, things like that. Doesn't it go to show you that when people wonder why there's not more liberal entertainers that are like political, like Bill Maher, they're like, why isn't there more people? Why isn't there an equivalent to Rush Limbaugh? Why isn't there an equivalent to this and that? And they go back and they look and they did Air America and it stunk. It was terrible. And it was like, because you try to put a lineup of five shows together and that was the best five you can put together. And it was horrendous. talk radio. Yeah. So I look at that and I say, is this why there's just like no one on the liberal side that can do any of this? Because the closest they have is Joe Rogan, who's looked at as a conservative, even though he's a pretty liberal guy. And that, I mean, the liberals reject him because he has things he agrees with when it comes to conservatives. And he allows people to express their opinions freely, which liberals do not like. They don't like when other thoughts come out there like that without getting stepped over. So as part of the, maybe the, I don't want to write the playbook for them, is one of the biggest things that they could do to gain an audience is to actually listen what other people have to say without it turning into that.
That would be the most, you know, a best way for them to go about it. I mean, I was listening to a clip of Jake Tapper, and he was talking about how he was on a podcast, and they asked him about his son. And he's like, it was a left-leaning podcast, and the two hosts didn't have kids. And so they asked him about his son. His son's like 15 and plays football and likes listening to World War II history things and wants to be a cop. And where the host went to immediately, and this is what Jake Tapper said, he said, where they went to immediately was they asked me if my son was racist. That's the first spot. He's like, he's 15. He thinks about playing linebacker, playing video games in World War II. You know, that's why they lose. It's to your point where you're talking about they are so locked into the push, the narrative, the echo chamber that they don't even realize that there are people out there that may not even be, that might be somewhat apolitical. And just because they don't have an opinion on it, you can't immediately put them in a box of, well, if they're not this, then they must be this.
Yeah. And for the longest time, the mindset was, and probably still is a lot in these liberal circles, which is, number one, you can't question something if it's looked at as insensitive, because ultimately the feelings of that person is more important than the truth or the reality that you're trying to uncover or whatever the topic of conversation is. And I'm so turned off by that. It's so like, okay, you can listen to it. And I realize that there are left-leaning people that do podcasts. It's the ones that don't bring up politics are the ones that are even remotely listenable. Yeah. It's like not even close. Can we play a clip from a liberal podcast? This is a Democrat activist, and they were talking about young conservative men. I want to play this clip for you, and I want to get your take on it, because I want you to tell me if you think they're right or not. So I don't even know what the name of this podcast is, but it doesn't even matter, to tell you the truth. This is clip 7.
Well, the reason why Republican messaging resonates with men is because men want bad things, right? It's like, yeah, men want to have sex and like own women, right? Like they want to dominate everybody. And Republicans say, you get to do that. And then Democrats can't say that. So we just lost men. It's over, right? Like, mm-hmm. What are you talking about? Like a lot of times it will be men that are liberals who will like agree with that. I'm like, dude, what are you like, what is going on? Like there's a lot of men that don't think that way, obviously. And it's just such a negative view to take on like half of the human race.
Well, I also think it's just so abundantly clear that the people who say these things don't actually spend time talking to young men. You know this because we know each other in real life, but I spend a lot of time on college campuses, and I spend
he
a lot of time with
young men.
I love young men. I love frat guys. And in that, I've realized like even the ones that identify as conservative are almost always pro-choice. They're almost always pro-gay marriage. You'd be surprised at the number of them who support a Black Lives Matter. And so I feel like people just kind of lump them into this box when the truth is, again, a lot of them are with us on the issues. They're just not part of our coalition because they feel like they're not welcomed in it.
Okay. All right. So there's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
So the general assumption, men just want to own women right off the bat. Yeah. Not a good way to start an argument.
Yeah.
But, okay, so basically her thought is, for the most part, men are with us on a lot of these cultural issues. So what's the disconnect? Okay, what do you think about what she said?
I don't think she's right on that point.
Yeah.
I don't think that most men are for the things that she talks about. What did she say? Her name, by the way, is Olivia Juliana. She's a Democrat strategist, and she was a guest. Okay. I don't know the name of the podcast, unfortunately.
But, it don't matter.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, when I was pulling the clip, sometimes it'll tell you, and it just said unknown. So, but A, she's right. You need to talk to people, and you need to figure out where they are. But B, Where she's wrong is assuming that everybody's where they are on the issues. They're not. The country is not. I think the election in November proved that the country is not where they are. Now, they may not be full where, you know, Donald Trump MAGA is, but they are definitely not where Kamala Harris was in the Democrat Party, and they weren't buying that, especially the young men. They're right. You can't demonize the group of people based on their sex. That's bigotry. You can't do that. Or you can do that and just be happy losing elections. But if you talk to them and you want to regain and you want to win, you may need to look at your policies that they don't agree on and back out of it. Back off of some of these things. But I don't know if they can. The Democrats are so invested in those policies. It's going to be really hard for them to talk, to listen to the other side, and to change what they're thinking about these different areas.
Yeah. Let me mention this. Was this the ultimate strategy where the Democrats went wrong? And you mentioned bigotry there. Is it possible they said, well, you can't have bigotry if there's no such thing as man or woman? So yeah. We're just going to eliminate the definition and we're just going to say everything's all the same. There's no such thing as a biological man or woman. It's how you feel. Thus, bigotry can't exist.
I lost you there, Ryan. Ryan's on a remote connection, so we're going to get him connected back again. And
yeah, I got it. I'm sorry.
You got it. All right. So go ahead and finish your thought then.
So essentially, is that their thought? Bigotry can't exist with man or women, or man or woman doesn't exist either, because that's the way they're redefining it. Is it possible? Because you mentioned there's all this bigotry that's going on. Let's just, you know, eliminate that variable by eliminating man and woman. Is that possible?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know, man. There's just such an emphasis on the left on that I talked about a little bit earlier in the show, the oppressor versus the oppressed narrative. Mm-hmm. That there's in every situation, if somebody is succeeding, they're succeeding because they're oppressing somebody else. Yeah. And to your point, I mean, even in that, you're talking about they don't want any differences between men and women. They don't want any differences in people in economic status. They don't want any differences. They want everybody to be the exact same. Mm-hmm. And so I think instead of it being a strategy, I think part of it is just the natural outcome of their line of thinking. They will eventually get there because that's where the logic takes you.
You know, we should have saved that clip for our next guest because we have a Republican strategist coming up. We should ask what she thinks of the Democratic strategist viewpoint on these things. So we'll have Cassie coming up after the break. And I got to tell you that we still have a whole lot of time to go on the show. And if you haven't voted on the YouTube poll, you better go do that now, because we are going to read some results here coming up towards the end of the show. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Annie Fry. Don't go anywhere. 97.1 FM Talk. Who picked this song?
Oh, that would be Ethan. Ethan does the music and he's like, he was asking me, he's like, what should I pick? I was like, man, dealer's choice, man. Do your thing. So
he picked basically what was on his iPod shuffle.
Got a little ABBA. Hey, listen.
In 2005,
yeah. He comes into the studio and he comes into the station dancing to this song.
How? Does he have a boombox on his shoulder?
No, I think he's got earbuds in. I can't hear the song. I just watch him dance. I'm like, oh, that's definitely Dancing Queen.
So you just assume Dancing Queen?
Yes, yes.
And that's his jam?
Yeah, okay. Apparently. He's not here to defend himself, so we will say yes.
So Cassie Smeadle, she's not here yet, but hopefully we'll be able to grab her, right? The Republican strategist.
Yeah, she will be here shortly.
All right. I hope so too. But some of the entertainers that are putting out podcasts anymore, they become more and more popular. And there's one super liberal guy, and his name's Destiny. Are you familiar with him?
I am super familiar with Destiny.
I don't know much about him. Maybe you could inform me a little bit. So with that, why is he so popular? Like, how did he get popular? Because all I know is that once in a while, YouTube will put these clips for me to watch, like shorts. And he seems to be like the biggest thing in the liberal movement, at least commentator-wise.
So the reason he has so much popularity is he actually is a video game streamer as well as an intellectual. He's a good debater. If you listen to him, he's actually pretty good at debating, even though he's wrong.
Wait, you called him an intellectual?
Yes.
Is that the proper term, or is that what he prefers to be called?
That might be what he prefers to be called. I mean, he is definitely an ideologue, and okay. But he's not completely uninformed. He's not just spouting off talking points and stuff like that. So he's good at debating, but his he's just, I don't know. Like you said, he comes across your screen, and I'm like, I can't watch this guy. And it has a lot to do with his attitude and his smugness. So you get the impression whenever you listen to him talk that he thinks he knows better than you. He thinks that he's smarter than you, and he thinks that you deserve his, ire. He definitely talks down to people that disagrees with him and stuff like that. And he has this sense about his arrogance sense about him that is very, very off-putting. So like when those videos come on, it's hard for me not to watch him because, you love to hate the guy because he's such a jerk. But B, you also like to see whenever he goes up against somebody who is his match or his superior, and you like to see him get his comeuppance.
Most of the videos I see when that happens, he gets very uneasy. Like he gets very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Is that the best the left has to offer right now when it comes to commentary? Is he like really the top of the top?
I mean,
or is that just like, maybe it's just, I have the wrong impression because YouTube recommends him so often.
I think a little bit is YouTube. He is the top on YouTube. I think it's him and Hassan Piker are the two that are the ones that have the most influence on the streaming platforms from Twitch to YouTube and stuff like that. So they would be the people that are going after the younger crowd. And again, both of them are video game streamers who are also podcasters who also like to discuss politics and have left-leaning things. They are the best in that realm. I don't know that they're the best overall that the left has, but they, it's hard. I struggle to come up with somebody that is like really good and really solid that they have at this point.
Yeah. And what's interesting to me too, is that you have people like Don Lemon, who former CNN had a large audience. Well, relatively speaking, not large for what would be a cable news network, but had a audience. And now he's trying to do the independent thing and no one pays attention to him. But these people that, like, for me, I don't know anything about them, but I see them promoted all the time. I don't quite get that, honestly. It's a weird world, I guess, when it comes to some of that. Yeah. All right. So I think we're ready to go. Cassie Smedley, Republican strategist. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So we were just talking about it's so funny. We played a clip from a liberal podcast, a video cast, and it was a Democratic strategist talking about how Republican men want to own women. And most Republican or at least conservative young men are closeted when it comes to their views on social issues. And I don't know, should we play that clip again? I would love to hear a Republican strategist view of a Democrat strategist. Brad's going to bring this up real quick because this could be pretty fun. Brad, can we play that?
Well, the reason why Republican messaging resonates with men is because men want bad things, right? It's like men want to have sex and like own women, right? Like they want to dominate everybody. And Republicans say, you get to do that. And then Democrats can't say that. So we just lost men. It's over, right? Like, what are you talking about? Like a lot of times it will be men that are liberals who will like agree with that. I'm like, dude, what are you like? What is going on? Like there's a lot of men that don't think that way, obviously. And it's just such a negative view to take on like half of the human race.
Well, I also think it's just so abundantly clear that the people who say these things don't actually spend time talking to young men. You know this because we know each other in real life, but I spend a lot of time on college campuses. And I spend a lot of time with
young men.
I love young men. I love frat guys. And in that, I realized, like, even the ones that identify as conservative are almost always pro-choice. They're almost always pro-gay marriage. You'd be surprised at the number of them who support a Black Lives Matter. And so I feel like people just kind of lump them into this box when the truth is, again, a lot of them are with us on the issues. They're just not part of our coalition because they feel like they're not welcomed in it.
All right, so we'll kind of cut it there. So the Democratic strategists are saying that young conservative men are for abortion, love Black Lives Matter, and can't get enough gay marriage topics and things like that, culturally speaking. So what do you think about strategy?
Wow, that was really a treat to listen to. I'm sorry, guys. Can you hear me okay?
We can, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Sorry, I thought I lost you. That was a treat to listen to. Let me tell you this. Did you hear this week, I'm sure you've talked about it, that the Democrats announced that they're going to spend 20 on a syntax study to study the verbiage that young men use, and they think that is what is ailing them. That's what's going to help change minds. And yes. I hope they spend that money. That will be money well spent for them. To any Democrat strategist listening, go spend $20 million on that. I will enjoy my time continuing to win elections. Because here's the thing. It is the Democrat policies that are the problem. It's the messengers and the message that are the problem. They need to clean the slate. I don't know who they replace their people with, but it's not Tim Walz. It's not AOC. It's certainly not Kamala Harris. And every time Joe Biden gets rolled out, that's a problem for them too. But let me tell you, there was also somebody yesterday, I can't keep up, who was saying that Republican women, that's making the same argument, that Republican women are the ones that are closeted liberals. I don't, as a Republican woman, I have never felt that Republicans were going to take away my right to vote. I believe it was Kyra Sedgwick who was saying this, the Hollywood actress. Take away my right to vote, take away any of my rights. But here's what I do know for sure. Men and women, especially millennial Gen Z, that at our core, we want to have a good job that pays the bills and allows us to live a life comfortably. We do want to get married, have children, and to be able to raise those children in safe communities. All the same things that were the image of the American dream for our parents and grandparents, that hasn't changed. What has changed is our ability to achieve those things because it's too expensive to get a house, to pay for groceries, to put gas in your car. Those were the things that we voted for change last fall. It's too expensive to raise kids. And oh, by the way, the left is telling us that you can just put all of that off, that that's not going to make you happy. And as a mom to two young kids, I can tell you I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life. I'm the most tired I've ever been, but I'm the happiest I've ever been. One of the most fulfilling things you can do is to aspire to have a family and to have children if that's what you choose. But my point being that every time that they say that, try and put us in a box and say that it's about social issues or it's about the syntax and the way you talk, and they do a TikTok dance and they put four-letter words into tweets, it's just them missing the mark. The reason the left has lost the plot, the reason the left is losing the young person's vote is because they have gotten so far removed from the basics, which is to allow people or to empower people by not over policy, over regulating, over taxing, empower people to be able to work hard and achieve their American dream and take great pride in that. And that just, that message does not exist in today's Democrat Party. But Donald Trump really championed that idea for people. And that's why you saw people giving him a chance and giving Republicans a chance.
I know. Wasn't it great, all the leading up to this last election, all the things that Kamala Harris and I think about the peak of publicity for the Democrat Party, which was we need to get Michigan's governor to get down on her knees so we can give her communion and insult all the Catholics. All right. Real quick, I want to make sure we get to talk about this, too. The big, beautiful bill that's out there. There's a lot of takes on this, and Republicans are thinking to themselves right now, why do we need to add more trillions on? And there's been a lot of compromise too, trying to figure out the way to get something like this passed. What are your takes on it?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, first of all, I worked on Capitol Hill for 10 years, most of those years in the minority, where either we didn't have, Republicans didn't have control of Congress, or it was when Barack Obama was in the White House. It's a really sad place to be when you're in the minority. So when you win and you have the opportunity to actually get some of your policies enacted into law, you need to take that bull by the horns and do it. And unfortunately, what we saw is when Democrats were in the majority, they did that and they put us trillions of dollars in debt. Republicans played their part too. But what we saw, particularly during the Obama administration these last 4 years, is $6 trillion in green new scams disguised as an infrastructure bill. They did that. And we reaped the consequences of that with our gas prices, grocery bills, and generally feeling like our lives were being robbed from us. And so Republicans are trying to undo so much of that. And of course, President Trump has done a lot with his executive orders.
but we need those to be permanent changes. And in this big, beautiful bill, to be clear, it's not the budget. The budget is when you have more maneuverability to get so much of this stuff really codified into law. But the big, beautiful bill is a good start. But you have to acknowledge the reality that to do, they couldn't do too much because you'd need 60 votes in the Senate if you got too far astray on it. Or if you, so this is what they were able to do within the context of this legislation. But one thing they also did, in addition to, you know, we can talk about the specifics of it, of making permanent the Trump tax cuts and no taxes on tips, those things that are good promises made and promises kept. But do y'all remember when we had Republican speakers of the House who used to say, all right, fine, if I can't get the votes from Republicans, I'm going to go to Nancy Pelosi and I'm going to give her some concessions and get her to get me Democrat votes. Mm. And that really made for terrible bills. Mm. Speaker Johnson, with President Trump as the closer, did not have to do that this time. They went in and they said, we know this isn't perfect. We're going to keep working at it. We know they're going to introduce more legislation. We know the appropriations process is going to be a place where a lot of this is going to get worked out for some of these promises that we really want codified into law. But it is a good thing that Republicans held together. That's not something we've been really good at doing in the past. And by the way, what I will say, I would love to be a Puritan. I would love to have a clean bill that reduces the deficit, that doesn't have any extras in it, that none of us like, all of that. But what I would love more is these people that are holdouts for sport and they love to cheer and go find a microphone about it, but then they're not willing to get their hands dirty and do the work. We need more of that and less of the people that just want to decry progress. So I know that's coming from a place of someone who worked a lot of long nights on Capitol Hill with great frustration, but I applaud that there's progress. And if we have the majority, yes, we got to be doing more, but this is, if you believe it or not, this is progress. This is stuff in the right direction. And there's no illusions that it's perfect, but we're just getting started. And this is why it's important to get even more Republicans elected if we really want to see change affected. It takes a long time to turn around the Titanic.
Cassie, this is Brad. I wanted to ask you a real quick question here about like the way things are defined as deficit spending and how if you cut taxes and how that math works out on Capitol Hill, how that counts as deficit. Can you explain that or clear that up?
Well, it's clear as mud, isn't it? It's you know, they say girl math. It's like Washington math. $1 in gets $2 out, right? But
right.
So I truly cannot in a clearly concise way, but what I can tell you is that there's trying with pay fors, right, to pay for something. And a lot of times what they use is they say, well, this thing that's going to take effect over the course of 2 years, but we're going to pay for it over the course of 10 years. So therefore, it's not going to add to the deficit or it's going to net out after 2 years. So that's how you get into this deficit term, I guess you can say. But the other piece that you have to play with here in terms of the spending is, of course, mandatory and discretionary. Mm-hmm. And that's a big piece. I'm sure you guys have seen the clip, the previewing of Elon doing his CBS interview for this weekend, where he was upset about a lot of the DOGE cuts not being included. Well, as Stephen Miller outlined in a recent, Truth Social or mm-hmm. tweet or whatever they're calling it today, that so much of that is because this bill could not that DOGE is so much of the discretionary spending. This bill is dealing with mandatory spending, and that's really, really hard to cut. So they had to get creative and figure out other ways without interrupting the rules of the Senate, which would then push this bill to a 60-vote threshold. So add that on top of it. Yes. So they were really threading a needle into a very small hole here. But again, the appropriations process, I know the Senate's going to get the big, beautiful bill now, and we're going to hear about it for the next 4 weeks or so. But where we really want to say, go do your job, is the appropriations process. That's where you can really get in and affect some change. Mm-hmm. And Congress has not done a proper appropriations process in more than a decade. They just keep rolling. Remember the omnibus bills, the continuing resolutions, the Christmas trees at the end of the year? That's because they're not able to get the appropriations all done throughout the year. So that's really where they should be, putting their heads down and pen to paper and getting to work. And I hope they're able to do that.
Wow. So Cassie, you're VP of Communications at COIN. If people wanted to look you up, where can they go?
Yeah, well, I hope you guys will go to COIN, COIGN.com. check us out. Get on the wait list for our credit card. It's a values-aligned spending movement. Make your money match your values. Don't let your money go to these big woke credit card corporations that are doing things with it that you don't agree with and that detract from you achieving your American dream. Right now we're on a wait list, but we want you to join it and find out all the latest and greatest that's happening there, and then we'll let you know as soon as you're able to apply.
Right. Cassie Smedley, and you are a Republican strategist, VP of Communications at COIN, COIGN, at CMS, or CM Smedley probably would be the better way to put it there, on social media. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks. Great to be with you guys. And as a fellow, or as a Kansas Cityan, so fellow Missourian, it's always fun to feel like I'm just talking with friends and neighbors.
That's what it is, just on the other side of the state, but still. Missouri's Missouri.
Right.
Cassie, thank you so much.
That's right. Thank you. Bye.
All right. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you like that answer? The one trying to understand all
well,
that?
Well, the thing about it is she's absolutely right. It's so convoluted and complicated. And then I think that makes part of your job as a lawmaker, and specifically for the Republicans, you know, you get this funky Capitol Hill math and the way that they say, oh, well, this is a deficit now and this is not deficit spending. And then now you're going to raise all this up. You're trying to cut taxes, which apparently counts toward the deficit.
Yeah.
Which everybody be like, no, yeah, cut my taxes. I definitely want you to cut my taxes. I don't want any more taxes. And then you give this message to the other side. It's like, hey, look, they're deficit spending. They're raising the debt. They're doing all these other things. And what you're essentially doing is not taking money out of the pockets of everyday Americans. So it's so incredibly difficult to explain, and I appreciate the complicated nature of it.
The appreciation of the complicated nature sounds like an opening line to a book I won't read. It sounds so complicated.
I'm going to write that book and send it to you.
Well, Wiggins is the writer, so maybe we should save it for him. That would be his thing. All right. Thank you for that. If you want to go leave a comment on the YouTube page, go do that. We'll look at those comments. And coming up, we got, you know what? I want to play a clip from Stephen A. I want to know what you think of Stephen A. Smith. And after we play this, I think you'll kind of get an idea a little bit more of where I'm coming from. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Andy Fry, 97.1 FM Talk. So I got and welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Annie Fry. We have the YouTube poll going, and I was looking at some of the comments that were coming in here. Some people are saying they're not done looking at all the documents when it comes to the Epstein stuff. So who knows? Maybe their opinions may change on that. But has your opinion changed on it? So we'll get that poll answer in about an hour from now. So are you buying the official narrative on Jeffrey Epstein? That is the poll question. So, talking about the Republican strategist we just had on, I'm not sold on this bill. I really am not sold on it still. I understand that there's ways to look at this and spin it in a way where it is more favorable, as in it's not a bad thing. I just feel like you have the opportunity to make this into a better situation. And I know that you don't want to basically shut down the government over something like this. I understand that. But man, I just don't want to keep adding more and more things onto the debt over even the course of a decade. It's too much. We've already had our fair share of add on to the debt. We got to stop it at some point. And it's why not start now? So I think people are commenting on that too. You can go to the YouTube page and comment on it. Brad, what do you think of Stephen A. Smith?
Are we talking about Stephen A. Smith, the sports commentator, or Stephen A. Smith, the political commentator?
What about Stephen A. Smith, the soap opera actor?
I don't know that one.
You don't know? He's what is it? I forget which soap opera he's on, but he has a reoccurring role.
Oh, really?
Or like the past decade. Like they would bring his character out a couple times a year. And, you know, I'll be here in the newsroom. You know, I work in Detroit now. And they'll have all the TVs on and all the network television shows have the, you know, soap operas during the day. And once in a while, you'll look up and there's Stephen A. Smith on the soap opera.
That's
and he'll
weird.
Say, what is he doing there? So apparently his character's a hitman for the mafia. And they bring him in to take characters out.
Oh, that's crazy. Okay.
How awesome is
that's
that?
That's like self-aware of those soap operas.
I love it, though. Like, if you can pick a character for yourself on a soap opera, how would you like to just come in once in a while to off someone? That's awesome.
Vicky in our chat says it's General Hospital is the one that he's on. That's amazing.
Oh, thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't I'm not a huge Stephen A. Smith fan, but I really don't like his sports takes. I don't think he's all that great at that, but he's popular and he makes money and he's got a podcast. So, okay, more power to him. It's interesting to watch him commentate on politics because he has such he's back and forth on it. Like sometimes you're like, oh man, this guy he's got some right leaning things. And then other times he's like very left leaning. But I think one of the best things about his political commentary is very clear-eyed on what is going wrong and what isn't going right for the Democrat Party.
That's the right way to put it, and that's someone you can actually have a conversation mm-hmm. with. He's the type of guy you can look at it and say, he's got strong opinions, but you can actually talk to him. Stephen A. Smith was discussing the new Tapper book regarding former President Joe Biden. Can we play clip number 8?
There is no way to get around what I'm about to say. When you consider this book, Original Sin, and what the Biden, members rather, of the Biden administration, along with other people in the political apparatus that is the Democratic Party, when you could take into consideration what several folks, if not many, were willing to do to conceal the cognitive decline that President Biden was enduring, nobody comes out looking better than Donald Trump and the MAGA right. Because the things that they were saying, the things that they were accusing the left of, the things that they were accusing legacy media of, whether it's true or not, they look right. They look like they were on point.
They were. I mean, yeah. There's no other way to put it. They were 100%. There's no way around it. They were right. And they continue to be right about this sort of thing. I think the Tappers of the world that put the book out and they're trying to go back and revise as if they weren't part of the problem to begin with is laughable. Mm-hmm. I don't think that after the election, they just woke up and realized that, oh, I can't believe I've been deceived. No, they were one of the active participants in deceiving, much like Stephen A. Smith pointed out. What do you think of his take there? On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being he's right on, 1 being way off, where do you think he's at?
Oh, he's an absolute 10 on that take.
He's a 10.
Yeah, he's right. He said if and basically what he's saying is if they lied about this, what Republicans say is if they lied about that, which is obvious, what else are they lying about? We were right on this, and they told you were crazy for believing it. What else are they lying about? So, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I've been saying it for a long, long time with Joe Biden. You can tell it was just not there. And even going into that last election, too, I remember saying, I don't even think he was going to make it through the first term. And you know what? Technically speaking, I don't think he did. Someone else was running the government, and it wasn't him. I think that's pretty clear. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Andy Fry. Don't go anywhere. 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.